Hey everybody, before we get started, really excited to announce that Beth will have a table at this year's San Diego Comic-Con. That's right, from November 26th to November 28th, she'll be at booth GG52 at the San Diego Comic-Con. So excited for her to have a table there, and really excited for any of you who are attending the con to be able to purchase her art at San Diego Comic-Con. It's incredible. We're so happy for her. So go check out Beth's table, GG52, if you are attending the con, if you're in the San Diego area. I've seen a couple preview items, and they are very, very fun. So, again, booth GG52, San Diego Comic-Con, November 26th to 28th. And now, the show. Previously on D&D&D.
This is the Feywild, correct?
So you know where you are. Do you know how did you get here? And he looks at you in Navia, and he looks you over, and he sees what you're wearing and what you're dressed as. He sees the insignia and your armor and stuff. He says, I think maybe you should come inside. I was expecting some guests, but they haven't arrived, and it's curious that you've turned up. What brought you here? Are you here in an official capacity? And he looks at you two, Navia and Katheria.
Oh, no. No, nothing official.
Do you have the materials to get back? Do you have... No. I didn't really get that far. They don't share that... knowledge with us.
Perhaps that's the knowledge and wisdom that you can bequeath to us.
Plinthorin kind of like looks at you and smiles a little bit. It's like, well, I would love to, as a matter of fact. I think that that's something that we could both benefit from. And I would be totally willing to do that if I could enlist your help, perhaps, in figuring out what happened to my dinner guests. Welcome to D&D&D, the Dinner Party Role-Playing Podcast. I'm your host and Dungeon Master James Gressel. With me today are fun people, Beth and Mike. Say hi, fun people.
Hi!
Yeah.
Yeah. We're fun people.
Yeah. We are continuing our prequel mini-series as we make our way through this fall and winter season. Busy, busy time. And we are going to get into the next section of it. This prequel miniseries inspired by shared foods, shared meals, of which we had one.
Oh my God. Yeah. You guys, this meal was so good that we didn't record that day.
Yeah, we sat down and we started eating and then we were like, And then Gressel was like, you guys want wine?
That would make this better. Yeah.
And then, we didn't record.
It was the second bottle, I think, that was like, oh, we're not recording today.
No, we're just having a nice time.
First bottle. Are you kidding? You brought it out and you set it down. You said, we're not recording. We're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
It was a charcuterie board. But yes. It was the most beautiful charcuterie. If you had a dream and it was, you were at like a castle and all the people who attend the castle created a charcuterie board for you, the guest of the queen, to come and enjoy. That's what this was.
It fresh was bread.
Outrageous.
Amazing
freshly
cheese.
Baked bread.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Three different types of cheese. We had blood oranges, grapes.
Blanched almonds.
Mm-hmm.
What are those little, my favorite little pickle friends?
Cornichons.
Cornichons. Listen to that. Cornichons. And then you made a special...
The chicken liver mousse.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, which I was really excited to make. It was so fun to cook. That will be... I sent you the recipe for the recipe cards. That will be the recipe card available to patrons soon.
Awesome.
It was so much fun to cook. It was like a really, really enjoyable cooking process. But yeah, this was... I mean, I want to do a charcuterie board, a cheese board like that. It was inspired by a meal that my wife and I had in Northern Michigan, in Traverse City, at a restaurant called Stella, that we shared early in our relationship. It was a really fun thing to have when I didn't have a lot of money and couldn't afford most things at the restaurant, but we could get the board, and it came, and it was this huge board with a ton of food, and it was such a great thing that we could both share and really, you know, have a nice, satisfying, elegant meal with what was essentially the pieces of a sandwich all spread out. but it becomes this really wonderful experience where you're all reaching in at this to the same board and sharing
telling everybody like this combination is so good. Mm-hmm. You should try this. Bing, mm-hmm. bang, boom. Oh man, give me cheese every day.
It was a fun eating experience.
Yeah.
It was a really like that's a big part of what I'm thinking about with this one is these fun eating experiences and you know, when you're all around the same dish or set of dishes and picking at all the different stuff.
You remember when you were a kid and it was the night after you've done Halloween trick-or-treating and you and your friends all get into the basement and you pour your candy out mm-hmm. on the basement floor yeah. and everybody's like trading and mixing and tasting and talking and sharing stories from what best house they went to. Ah, that's what it's like, but like with meat.
With meat and truly. Cheese and fruit and stuff.
We poured it all on the floor. Picked at it. Trade it.
There are those weird like viral videos of like the countertop stuff, like countertop pastas and shit, where like people are dumping stuff all over the counter and mixing it all up and everything. And it's not that dissimilar from dumping it on the floor.
Right. Those don't look beautiful for the Instagram pictures, but the experience of eating pasta with your hands and your whole family, I would go for.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So weird.
Makes it memorable. Yeah.
But it would be fun.
You could do that like Lady and the Tramp pasta thing with your lover.
You could do that without making a mess and from a bowl.
Oh,
and a
Mike
fork.
Hates it.
Yes.
You put tinfoil down on the table before you do it. It'll be all right.
Oh, so it's all, yeah, no, let's continue. Let's continue on with this podcast here.
That was what we had last time. So that was kind of, you know, when I was thinking about like what would Plinthorin serve to everybody. When he brings them into his manor house, that seemed right for him. You know, that seemed like the kind of thing that he would have his staff kind of just be like, oh, put out some meat and cheese and bread and give these Blandlanders a taste of the good life.
I forgot about Blandlanders.
Right.
Poor us.
Yeah. That's
Zabbis is going to be so mad.
Like, that would be Chelsea's thing for the rest of the episode.
Just latch onto that.
Latch onto that and be pissed off about it.
Can't get over it. Can't pay attention to anything else going on in the plot. Just upset that the cape wasn't enough to change the perceptions of the world.
Yeah. No, my hair is blue. I am not bland.
I am not.
But yeah, so last we left you guys off in the tale of Katheria and Nils. Katheria, Navia, Nils, and Majumbo were transported into the Feywild, where they came across a mysterious magical carriage ride that drew them to this beautiful manor house where there were fireworks and this big show and everything. Turns out, not meant for them.
Mm.
Who'd have thought?
Yeah. Shucks.
Nils?
Yeah. Nils and Majumbo very excited about everything, and then nope, not for them.
Yeah.
But the wizard Plinthorin did say that if you adventurers were to aid him in the discovery of what happened to his original dinner guests, he might help you find a way home to your bland land. We're going to pick up a little bit after you guys had that conversation. In fact, you are now walking through the Feywild, some distance from Plinthorin's cottage, his manor house. The cottage is would definitely be a misnomer. It's a very, very nice place. And having taken up the quest eagerly in some cases and with hesitancy in others, mm-hmm. you have set out to discover what happened to those folks. And as you're walking, you're looking around, each of you, and you're seeing the Feywild in its kind of natural state. You know, now that you've kind of adjusted to the fact that this is the place that you are, you know, you can take in more of the scenery. The road is, you know, as kind of any other road in your world, but you can't help but pay attention to some of the animals that are moving through these really incredible trees, some of which are giant. Absolutely, absolutely massive skyscraper size. There's these just like
every so often these just huge, huge trees that dot the landscape and kind of tower above the rest. But underneath that, there's this separate layer of ecosystem that is more normal size. And moving through this canopy, this smaller, more recognizable canopy of trees, you see different kinds of creatures, strange, you know, like six-armed monkey-like creatures swinging around. Their colors matching the foliage that they're blending into of these, like, these weird fluorescent warm tones set against the cool tones of the sky and the ground.
There's camouflaged six-armed monkeys.
Yeah.
That's so scary, dude.
Yeah, but they look really friendly. For now.
Thank goodness.
For now. Okay.
They don't seem threatening. But also, monkeys are inherently scary.
Yeah.
Because they are intelligent and have opposable
they
thumbs.
They have thumbs, dude. And don't trust anything that has thumbs.
No.
Yeah, humans.
Monkeys.
They're,
those birds that, like, can hold on to things.
Cats that have six...
Cats that have thumbs.
Cats that have thumbs. How have they not taken over the world?
Yeah, well,
they don't. They're not opposable.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all it's going to take.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of fun birds that are very tropical, like, you know, all kinds of crazy plumage and weird bills that are, you know, all different shapes and sizes. Skittering across the ground, you have different kinds of mammalian creatures moving about. It's not like there are zillions of animals everywhere, you know, but it's very normal forest activity. Both Navia and Majumbo seem very interested in different aspects of this. Navia seems to be jumping into off the road, off the side of the road, into the kind of first layer of woods every so often to investigate a particular flower or try to get close to a particular animal, just to try to get a better sense of what this nature is like. She'll cast, you know, small magics to try to manipulate these different plants and test her strength a little bit, see if there's any kind of limitation on what she can manipulate in this world. Majumbo, on the other hand, is taking like meticulous notes. He's sketching and drawing, you know, more of a biological survey. He is inspired in a way by the kinds of things that he's seeing. He will trade his pen and notebook for his flute, you know, when he's so moved to translate what he's seeing into a musical phrase. And when he does, there's also a little magical effect. It seems there's nothing around you that doesn't come with a little charge of magic. There's nothing so far mundane about this. It's not so crazy that like every step has like an aura to it or anything, but there's an energy that you both are sensitive to in a way that doesn't exist in your world. I think Nils is filled with a sense of, you know, kind of like wonder and purpose. Like, we've got a quest, we're in this cool place, all is kind of right with the world in a way, even though we, you know, we're not in the world. It's familiar, but not too familiar. You've got something, you know, a quest, but in this place you don't know. So you're not really feeling any kind of super apprehension. There's a curiosity and a wonder that you're excited for. But Katheria, you're a little bit on edge.
Mm-hmm.
Not only because of this strange place, and not only because of your familial connection to it, but you're thinking back to before you left the mansion, when you were in the basement laboratory having a conversation with Plinthorin about this quest. And this is how we're going to do more exposition-y stuff in this version, is we're going to do it in kind of flashbacks.
Ooh.
Instead of just picking up exactly where we left off and we never move the story forward and it takes us a year to do everything.
That's oddly specific.
I wonder where that's coming from. In this new campaign with these new characters, we don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So you're thinking back to the conversation back in the basement, where Plinth explained to all of you, all four of you, that he was having these guests over, they didn't arrive, and all these things that he told you. But then later in the evening, after you guys had eaten and kind of, you know, exchanged some kind of pleasantries and more kind of get to know you kind of stuff, his tone kind of changed with you and Navia specifically. I would think that maybe at some point Nils and Majumbo were exploring some of the cool shit that he has. You know, that makes sense. Yeah, like he's got all these different wizard hats. There's
trying them on.
Yeah, like exactly, like doing different stuff and kind of like, you know, trying different little magical properties that they give you. Because each hat, he's got like a row of hats, and they're all wizard hats, and they all have different symbols and stuff on them, and each one does like a different thing. Yeah, you guys are probably playing around with, like, you put on one that has like flame symbols on it. And then because Nils isn't super, super magical, you do like a little like flame spell or whatever and like singe Majumbo's beard and he has to like put it out. No. And you're like, oh shit. And you guys are like goofing around and everything. But meanwhile, in another part of the basement, Flint's tone changes with Navia and Katheria. And he turns to you. He says, it's been some time since members of the Order have been on this side of things, and you know, it's really good timing that you've come here, and I'm very glad to have such illustrious druids as members of the Order of Gala Doi to help me in this issue. You see, it wasn't just a mere dinner party that I was having. I had called a summit of some of this world's most influential organizations, influential peoples, to discuss some matters that have been happening in this world.
Oh, I think at that, Kat's hackles, like the hair on the back of her neck stands up.
Mm-hmm. I sit upon a council of elves ruling over this world as kind of overseers and administrators of all the peoples within it. We see ourselves at our best as perhaps a first among equals, but there are those in our ranks that definitely see us as superior. I don't believe that to be the case. I think we're all stronger together, but I have reason to suspect that there may be some subterfuge happening within the council. I had called this meeting in secret amongst these other groups, these other peoples, to discuss some of these problems.
A secret meeting with fireworks.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wanted to show everybody a good time. I like a party. Well, just because we're talking, you know, politics doesn't mean we have to be bored to doing it.
Of course not. Of course not. But, Plintharin, perhaps in the future I would suggest not having beams of light projecting up into the clouds. For that's what caused us to come towards your manor.
You know, now that you mention that, I could see that as probably a security risk. Mm. But they look so good. They did.
I really liked them.
I put on the hearing hat. I can hear everything.
Yeah, it's a wizard hat with big ears on the side of it.
Those are only a little bit bigger than your real ones.
Oh, same.
He's sensitive about his ears.
Come on.
It takes it up.
Just like slowly. Look at that. I'm sorry. I go too far.
That's okay.
I know I don't have to tell members of Gala Doi about the... And he gets kind of quiet at this point, and he looks back over and he makes sure that Nils isn't wearing the ears hat. And he says, I know I don't have to tell members of the Order about the arrangement between our peoples that kind of keeps things going, so to speak. But I've been doing a lot of research into this matter, and it seems that for several generations, you...
Man, can I roll to, like, keep my breathing steady?
Yeah, for sure. Performance?
Would it be performance?
Or deception, maybe? You're trying to appear calm.
I'm trying to appear calm. Because when he says you...
Yeah.
Have a reaction.
Let's do deception. This will be the eighth roll.
Keeping track.
Overall, after our big session last time.
Plus zero, baby. Let's do it. Hey, 17.
Oh, yeah. As far as you can tell, you are able to keep it together. But like...
I don't feel okay.
Yeah, and Navia obviously knows what's up, and she knows... that you know that he's talking about you, but it doesn't seem that he knows.
Okay.
And in fact, Navia is going to go, because I'm player and DM, which is interesting for this one. Navia is going to roll an insight roll and try to figure out if Plinth knows who he's talking to or not.
Mm-hmm.
13. As far as she can tell, he doesn't know who he's talking to. And she senses your uncomfortableness. Mm-hmm. She can tell, even though you're able to kind of hide it from him, she can tell what's going on. And she knows all the background, of course, too. And she kind of like moves her leg over to touch yours. Just as a comfort.
Yeah.
You know, to be like, I know, like cool it. It's all right. Mm-hmm. You know, like as a message in the way that you guys can kind of communicate. The way that friends like that can,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, it's okay. Like, keep calm. Let him talk. See what he says. He continues to say, I know that you know about the arrangement between our peoples. For several generations, I've noticed that there have been differences in our world in a way that when I was younger, it wasn't this way. That when we would have the ascensions, there was always periods of calm and understanding in this world of peace. And things have been a little bit more active, I suppose. It's something that if you weren't paying attention, you wouldn't really know. But part of my job is paying attention. And I've been looking into this matter and this arrangement that we have. And every time he says arrangement, he kind of like puts a little lilt on it. It's clearly a euphemism.
Yeah.
Things may not be what they seem. And you have no idea what he means by that.
Yeah.
And he goes on to say, I had gathered members outside the council to discuss this because I worry that I can't trust the council right.
Kat's brain is racing. She's trying to figure out how old is Plinthorin. Because he's talking about these generations, the changes and effects in generations. She's trying to think about her own personal history and how far back she knows. She's like angry and resentful that she's hearing about this time of peace and knowing that it has to do with this like
comes
misery.
At a cost.
Yeah, a personal cost.
Yeah.
And she's confused because why would something be changing? Like, what's happening that? Like, it's confusing and also causes her to be angry. There's just a maelstrom of thoughts in her head right now. And she doesn't know if she wants to ask, but she doesn't want to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think she will because like she doesn't want this.
Right. She still wants to kind of stay anonymous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So far you do. I mean, there's nothing in his behavior that indicates that he knows who you are. He doesn't mention your family name.
Mm-mm.
He doesn't mention any specifics about what it is. He always uses that euphemism of an arrangement.
And that's throwing her off, too.
Yeah.
Because an arrangement, what would change in the arrangement? Why use such a lithe term for something that's so devastating?
Mm-hmm. So that's what you're thinking about as you guys are walking through the woods now, is this conversation. Like, that's still sitting with Katheria of, like, he thinks that we're just... we're just druids of this order that is supposed to be involved with this arrangement somehow on the known world side of things.
And that's upsetting.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't, her experience in the order has not led her to be associated with the arrangement at all.
Yeah, it's never
been
brought up. She was
supposed to be away from, like she was escaping this
mm-hmm.
and hasn't been able to escape it even ever.
Yeah. So now that you're not there anymore, you've left, you're some distance now at this point. Let's say that you've traveled, you know, you got there at night, you would have stayed the night and rested and, you know, like geared up and everything for like adventure. I feel like, you know, like that next morning when you guys set out, like Nils is like armor polished, hammer in hand,
yeah.
like ready to go, like.
Katheria like didn't sleep. Bags under her eyes, irritable.
Wait, so do I gain my 2 hit points back that I lost?
Yes, okay. Great. Yeah, like Nils and Majumbo are like bright eyed, bushy tailed, like up with the sun, like ready to go, kind of thing. had a big breakfast prepared by Plinthorin's staff, and you know the eggs are blue and like stuff's all weird.
Blue food. Not allowed.
Yeah, blue food's strange.
Ah, but Nils doesn't care. He's an adventurer.
Yeah, what? Right?
He's willing to take that.
He ate like 5 blue eggs.
Yeah. So you've left, you know, and it's now, you know, like late afternoon. So you've traveled for a bit in the direction that Plinthorin told you some of his guests were coming from. And he told you before you left, like, there are other, I had VIP guests coming from the city. And he doesn't, there's no name. It's just the city. And he says, I need to go and look into that matter personally, because these were very important, you know, high level people that were coming from the city. And I wouldn't put you at risk. If anything were to happen to this guest, bad news. I will look into that personally. But my other guests could have been waylaid by any number of things that adventurers such as yourselves could handle. I see you and you look very capable. And then I know that you guys are you know, members of the order. So you'll be okay with to look into this. But I won't be joining you. I'll be over here. And then he also gives you a magic item that is like a small pop-up book. When you open it, it pops up and it's an image of the laboratory, the basement laboratory. And it's got the little like tabbies that pop-up books have to like move stuff.
Yeah.
He waves his hand and 4 more pop-up things pop up, and they're images of you guys.
Oh.
And they have like little tabbies to move them. And he says, if you use this pop-up book, when you're in a safe space, if you have questions about anything that you've come across, you can move your image into the lab and you will astral project into the lab. But make sure you do it safe, because you will be completely out of it in the physical world wherever you are, and totally at risk if all 4 of you are projecting this way. But it'll allow you to go back to the lab in a sense. And have access to some of my information, because I know this is a foreign place to you. And Majumbo is super jazzed about this book. And he grabs it and he's like, this is the most amazing thing. There were so many books down there. I can't wait to... Every night I'm going to be projecting back to this place and reading all of your books, Mr. Plinthorin. It's so... This is amazing. What a cool thing. He's super jazzed about this book. So Majumbo has that. And then you guys leave. But while you're traveling... later in the afternoon, and Katheria is thinking back on that conversation, Navia comes up to her. She's got like a ferret like creature that's kind of like crawling around her that she found. And she doesn't address that at all. She just comes up to you as this thing is kind of like just crawling around her, like picking in her hair and stuff, and she doesn't pay it any attention. I told you, Kat, there was something from that conversation that the Order knows something. They know something about you. They know something about a lot of things, and they weren't telling us about it.
What am I supposed to gather from that? My mind's been racing ever since that conversation, Navia. I'm so overwhelmed.
I know, but the answers seem to be here. It seems like we'll be able to find what we came here for, and everything that I told you is true. They're hiding information from us. We'll get the answers here, and here is the only place that we could learn the truth.
What if it's terrible, Navia? What if I find out that this is inevitable? I'm doomed. Everywhere I turn, it seems that it just points me back to my family falling apart.
We won't let that happen. We won't. There has to be a different way. Things are not. And she kind of trails off and stumbles a little bit, almost like she was going to pass out. She kind of like falls a little bit into you. And,
oh, I grab her shoulders.
Yeah, and she's, oh, I'm sorry. Just the surge effects. I haven't completely worn off the way that they usually do. It's all right. I'll be okay. It's fine. And she seems fine now.
Okay.
But yeah.
I think this little ferret thing that's running around her body, I want to speak to animals with it, like put my finger on its chin and lift it up and ask it to like mind Navia, to take care of Navia if she has a spell like that.
Okay.
Cat casts speak with animals to the ferret. The magic rainbow ferret.
The magic rainbow. Exactly. Yeah. Its fur kind of shimmers. You gain the ability to comprehend and verbally communicate with beasts. The knowledge and awareness of the beast is limited by their intelligence. May be able to persuade a beast to perform a small favor for you at the at the GM's discretion. I digress that you can. The ferret understands. It doesn't really have much to say back to you.
Mm-hmm.
There is an animal instinct of protection that it gets.
Yeah. I like want to turn this ferret into a assistance animal.
Like, yeah. A support animal?
A support, yeah. Not even like more than a, what is it called? There's support animals and then there's not therapy. Oh shoot, there's two different
Seeing
classifications.
Eye ferret.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah, like
yeah, so when she has
special needs?
A special ferret. Needs ferret.
Right?
Yeah, to alert you if something happens or yeah, like yes, yeah. The ferret gets that like okay, it has to communicate to you her well-being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If something's up, yeah. You have a job now.
Yeah, the ferret has a job now, yes. Yeah, and it kind of stands up straighter on her shoulder and then goes back to milling about.
And I smile, because it's kind of like a cheeky thing to do, but
yeah.
Just
and
in case.
Navia kind of looks at you and is like, you didn't have to do that. But yeah, but up front, as you guys are having these kind of like hushed conversations about whatever, you get to a fork in the road. There's a left and a right. Nils thinks back to the conversation that you had with Plinthorin before you set out, where he indicated which way to go, and he did not mention anything about this fork. He did not say, he didn't get so specific with directions that was like, you take the road for, you know, a couple miles, and then you, you know, turn left or turn right. You are presented with this choice. Majumbo turns to you and he says, well, you know, I always want to go left.
I was thinking the same thing.
You can't be wrong when you go left. No, that's not as good as the other way.
Yeah, because if it was like, you're always right if you go right.
If you go right.
But
I don't want to go right.
Yeah, no, I also don't want to go right.
Ladies, we're going left.
Oh.
He like takes you kind of out of it. Like you were in this like intense place and he just turns around and said, left!
All right.
Hey everybody, Gressel here with a few quick announcements, then we're going to get you right back to it. Thanks so much for listening to episode 3 of our prequel mini-series with Beth and Mike. Having a lot of fun with this one. I hope you guys are having a lot of fun listening to it as well. We will be back with the next episode of that on Wednesday the 24th. It'll be the day before Thanksgiving. Very exciting. Thanksgiving is my favorite, and I'm looking forward to getting up to that holiday. So that's when the next episode will come out. Just a reminder that we're doing every other week releases here throughout the winter and throughout this miniseries. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/dndndpod. We're going to have our last round of rewards for this year coming out soon as Beth gets them designed. But in the meantime, if you're a new patron at the t-shirt level, we are releasing the old designs. If you've missed them, the old designs will be available at a discount price to purchase to patrons, the Patreon exclusive t-shirt designs. So go and check that out, patreon.com/dndndpod. If you would like any of our regular merch, you can check it out on TeePublic. Go to teepublic.com and search dndnd, and you'll find our logo design, the campaign team, the Gerbert Merpert Reality, and you can get that in t-shirts, mugs, tote bags, stickers, a few other fun merch items over there. Follow us on social, dndndpod on Twitter and dndndpod on Instagram, or email us at dndndpod@gmail.com. And I think that is it for me for this one. So thanks, everybody. Do what's fun.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey after a little bit down this way, the road goes away. It just kind of fades into countryside almost. The trees start to thin out a little bit. There are still these massive trees that kind of just dot the landscape. They're almost like wind turbines, you know, like how you can kind of see them in the distance and they just tower over like a big like field or whatever. That's what these big trees are like.
So the last time we recorded, you mentioned that these trees reminded Kat of the Inner Sanctum wood.
Mm-hmm.
And she's busy thinking about stuff, but there is a pull. Like, she wants to go investigate this bar.
One of these big trees?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's one that's close enough where you can go and check it out. You kind of peel off. I wouldn't imagine she would
tell anybody. No.
Majumbo would notice. I don't know if Nils would. Nils might just kind of, yeah.
They don't notice.
Majumbo kind of stops you, and he's like, hey, wait, we lost one. She's looking at a tree.
Oh, all right.
Are you using the tree, or should we stay over?
We can give you your privacy.
She is not listening.
All right, we'll back off. I think she might be using it.
Wait, it's fine. you like turn around and
start whistling.
Yeah. You start whistling.
But Jumbo whips out his flute.
Yeah. And just
sort of adds to the air of mystery to suddenly have a flute.
Yeah, then there's
happening in the background.
Yeah, there's just this flute music now, and you get closer to this tree.
I want to know if it's the same wood.
Roll nature.
12.
You can't tell if it is the exact same species because the wood in like the black oak walls around the castle and the wood in the chamber and stuff is mostly dead. You know, you haven't really encountered this kind of wood alive.
Is there runes, like carvings all over that, the dead wood?
Yeah, when in the moonlight, it reveals itself.
Gotcha.
As you approach it, it's daytime right now.
Mm-hmm.
But as you approach it, are you doing anything to try to get it to react?
Now I am. I have druidcraft that could maybe summon a moon.
That's a harmless sensory effect.
A golden orb for clear skies, a cloud for rain, falling snowflakes for snow.
So you could like make a like little magical moon.
Yeah, like just emanate some moonlight.
Yeah, just like a soft glow. You create this kind of image of the moon,
mm-hmm.
which we established is the same among the worlds. There isn't a different moon here. It appears as though it is the same moon. So you manifest this image from it. Navia comes over and she kind of sees what you're doing and she amplifies it a little bit with her. She adds her magic to yours so that the glow gets a little bit brighter. And it doesn't give off much light in the, you know, mid-afternoon daytime, but it's enough. The two of you kind of move the
spell. Creep around to the backside of the tree with the shadow.
Yeah. And you move your little moon around with you as you do. And you see that the light interacts with the wood and it starts to reveal this inlay. There's a silvery kind of light, but it's different than the runes or symbols that you've seen in your world because on this tree that is rooted in the ground and still very, very actively alive, they move. It's more like you're looking at the blood of the tree. Like the veins, the circulatory system of this living being, there's a movement and an energy to this inlay that doesn't exist in anything that you've seen in your world.
The Temple of Galadoy that we study at is also made out of the same material,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is a hollowed out version of one of these giant trees, yeah.
Navia, do you recognize this?
This is incredible. It's Galamithir, but there's hundreds of them, and
they're alive.
And so alive. I wonder. And she takes a knife out from her, you know, her belt. And she doesn't, you know, like stab the tree or anything, but she just kind of scrapes very gently and carefully at the bark. And a silver sap starts to emanate from the cut that she makes, the incision that she makes. Just a very light scratch. Nothing that would damage the tree. She knows enough about plants to know, like,
she would never
just like carve a huge chunk of bark off or anything. But it's more scientific almost to just be like, all right, I'm going to make a small incision to sample what happens.
To check its insulin.
Yeah, yeah. And some silvery sap starts to secrete from this scratch.
I want to collect it.
In like a vial or something?
Ideally.
You would have something like that, I would imagine, in an adventuring kit or whatever your basic stuff is. I mean, worst case, you've got like your water skin or something. But I would imagine that you would have
because we were doing
experiments and stuff in the woods. Yeah, mm-hmm. So you would have ways to collect samples of stuff for later testing to make sure that the forest is good. So let's say you have a vial, small amount of this silvery sap from one of these great black oak trees.
I'm going to scratch off whatever was on the sample label that I was supposed to collect, hadn't collected, and just relabel it with...
toxic moss, nope. We got to like the real world where there's like a small fishing village downriver that's like... And like the fish are dying. It's like, weren't they supposed to deal with this?
Busy. Navia, do you think these trees grow in our world? Or were they imported? How are both of these things? I've never seen one alive like this.
This is what I was saying. I think the theories might be true that there's a connection between our world and an overlap of some kind between... Our valley and this place, it might be...
Everything looks so different except for these trees.
There has to be a reason for that. It can't be an accident, not something this massive, not a living organism this big moving between places like this. There's got to be a reason for it.
I'm sorry that I never trusted your intuition until I saw it with my own eyes, but I think you might be right.
Is it number one or two? You guys okay?
Taking some time. Maybe, you know, get moving a little bit.
Yeah, maybe more fiber. I guess.
Did you have enough bread yesterday?
They're disgusting.
We're doing science.
Uh-oh. Okay.
Never heard it called that.
While you're waiting for the ladies to finish their business, roll perception.
7.
Let's do a perception roll or... him 15. That's better.
Nice.
He'll be able to move the story forward.
I can't, but you can.
You get a whiff of something, which in this present situation at first is kind of like,
yeah.
Oh my god.
But as you kind of hone in on it, Nils isn't completely able to figure out what it is because it's a very strange smell. But Majumbo's like, that's quite the funky odor. I think it's coming from... It's not them. Don't worry.
Well, yeah, they're far away.
Yeah. No, there's something...
The winds are...
Yeah.
You know.
But there's something coming from that direction. I think it's it's such a strange smell.
Yeah.
And you kind of are able to focus in on it now, Nils, after taking some time. And it's a funky... Somewhere between onions and cooked cabbage, it's a strong, weird scent, and it's not something that you're familiar with. But there's other smells kind of layered underneath that too. But there's this one big strong odor that's kind of overpowering everything else. But there's still other things going on, and Majumbo's able to kind of pinpoint the direction that it's coming from. I think it's over there. I think there's something. Perhaps this is what we were looking for.
Yeah, let's go investigate.
Ladies, come on. There's a scent. I've picked up the scent.
Finally.
What do you mean, finally?
It feels like we've just been walking wherever you two want to walk. I haven't seen you track a thing.
Welcome to adventuring.
It's a lot of walking.
Yeah.
You don't have any kind of scientific method for where you go?
You follow the adventure.
Yeah.
Follow the adventure?
I mean, it would have been nice if Plinthorn would have given us like a turtle horse or something. I don't know, like to move us along.
A turtle horse sounds awesome.
I know. I don't know if it's real or not, but if it had horse legs.
If it's more horse than turtle.
Yeah.
Turtle shell, horse legs.
Yeah, exactly.
We could get going on a turtle horse.
Yeah, well, We don't have that, so we have to walk everywhere.
Such as adventuring.
It's adventuring, yep.
I'm just happy that there's a direction.
Yeah, come on.
All right.
It's more than left.
Left has led us to a lot of wonderful places.
Yeah, you got your big tree. We got our weird smell.
Right. This is two for all two. Because of left.
We're like not moving.
You're just having this discussion.
The theory is like, if I stop talking, maybe we'll start walking.
They're like, they like wait for a minute.
Okay.
You guys head in the direction of the smell. You're following it over a little hill, so you can't see kind of what's on the other side of this. The trees have really thinned out, the smaller trees and plants and everything, to where you're essentially now in a field. The grasses are that kind of burnt orange color. The sky, even the daytime sky, has more purple tones to it than blues. It is a bizarre thing that you're still adjusting to, but the basic premise of, like, we're in a field. There are big trees elsewhere, but, like, you know, we understand field, even the grass is weird. But you get to the other side of this hill, and you come across a scene that really takes you aback, to the point where, like, I think Nils and Majumbo would, like, react, would, like, drop to the ground and be like, hold here, like, something isn't right.
Mm.
I do. If the boys are, like, taking something seriously,
oh. I know it's real.
And the four of you kind of hit the deck and pause at this crest of the hill where you can kind of peek over it to see what's before you. You see what looks to be a sort of carriage. It's not the same kind of carriage that you rode in last night. It's not this big, ornate, mostly familiar carriage. It has a different kind of look to it. Even though it's all busted up and broken and kind of pieces are scattered around, you can kind of get the sense that There are aspects of a carriage that are like, there's nowhere that you would hook up like horses to it. That's missing. Mm. There's wheels. There's clearly a like cabin that's been broken apart. And then there's this other section that has some sort of strange box that you can't really explain. That is completely unfamiliar to you. But there's wheels, four wheels that are broken. There's this cabin section that is all busted up. There's a lot of broken glass. And like brass banding and things. It's, all these smells now are really strong. It looks like there's a pool of some sort of like dark liquid spilled somewhere nearby this crash site. You don't see any bodies or anything, but what you also see that comes out from behind the busted up carriage cabin section is a bipedal feathered creature with a very, very tiny arms and a big feathered head and beak, like big, thick, pointed beak. And clearly it has teeth inside this beak. It has a long tail and it tips its head back and it is swallowing what appears to be a very large fish.
Hmm.
It steps forward and turns around and it starts to sniff at that pool of dark liquid. From behind the cabin come a couple more of these creatures. There are three of these strange bird lizards that are now sniffing around this crash site. You guys are up on this hill. You're about 40-50 yards from this uphill. You're uphill from them. They don't appear to have noticed you. You're downwind, and you're getting all of these smells as a result. You don't know if the smells are coming from anything that has happened in this crash site or if it's coming from the bird lizards. Nonetheless, there's strange combination of really, there's funky smells, there's sour smells, it's a weird thing happening.
The thing just ate a fish. A big fish.
Oh, that kind of looked like a good fish.
Did that come from the carriage? I don't see any water sources. There's
no
water.
No, but these animals are very strange. Perhaps there are some kind of land fish here. You druids, are there land fishes?
I look at him like, of course there aren't land fishes.
Like, Majumbo and Nils are like, are there?
That would be, they'd be so easy to catch. Unless they had legs. Wait.
I think we're describing.
Oh.
You're describing lizards.
Yeah, that one got away from us.
It's a strange place. There could be.
Yeah, who knows?
Nobody knows.
That black pool of water, is that deep?
You see that one of the bird lizards kind of walks across it, and it's just surface level.
And it, does it affect him at all?
No, it it looks kind of sticky as they lift their like three-toed talons from it. It appears that it's sticky.
We have to get down there to investigate the crash site, but we have to deal with these birds.
Yeah.
You think they're hostile? They have those teeth look pretty nasty.
I'd assume they're hostile. What are they going to do? Smile at us?
Stranger things, I suppose. Could we scare them away? I don't know if we should just take them down. I guess we could eat them. I don't know. I don't want to needlessly kill an animal. They seem kind of just scavengers, you know?
So we could try throwing a rock or something, and then if that doesn't work, I could just stand up and yell.
I cast Cause Fear.
Okay.
You awaken a sense of mortality in one creature you can see within range.
A sense of mortality?
Yeah. The target must succeed on a wisdom saving throw or become frightened of you until the spell ends. So when they're frightened at me, they can't move towards me and they have disadvantage on attack or saving throws having to do with me.
Okay. Fail. Failed save. One of the bird lizards you target.
Suddenly is very scared for its life.
Yeah, it had bent down to like lick at the whatever this liquid is. And it like picks up its head right now and it starts like looking around like clearly panic. It starts squawking. It's somewhere between a squawk and a roar. Gets the attention of the other two and they also react like, oh, there is now danger. They're having a very animalistic reaction to a perceived threat of like there is danger here now. And they've like circled up so that now all their tails point inward. So they're in a like triangular array now, and they're kind of rotating, looking for whatever the threat is. They can't see it.
Let's scare them off. And I stand up and start walking towards the birds.
This is the first time Nils is like, oh, that's kind of attractive.
D&D is a Moorpark Media podcast and a Spotify preferred partner. Written and edited by me, James Gressel. D&D is performed by James A. Janisse, Chelsea Rebecca, Beth Bradloff, and Mike Seigen.